crack a rune, layer the music and have a swoon. I can't stop thinking of your face. La la la, the new mermaid. I'm 6 feet under the Bodhi tree with my crap new age philosophy. Diamonds where there once were stars. I'm sitting in Jane Mansfield's car. Yeah, yeah.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
People who work for the government of the city of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, have been banned from talking about city business with anyone outside the government. So says a declaration handed down by the acting city manager, who found himself embarrassed when the police department released information on planned staffing cuts to the media. Some city workers have protested what they call a gag order by taping their mouths at city meetings.
They are in violation of the law. And if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they will be terminated.
Ronald Reagan died over the weekend, leaving behind a legacy of huge budget deficits, increased military spending, and union busting. In 1981, his first year in office, the former president fired more than 11,000 striking air traffic controllers, destroying PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association. It's a move lauded by conservative Washington Post columnist George Will.
That really set the tone of the 80s for wealth creation, and it was good for labor. Because a nation that can fire workers will hire them.
But the National Air Traffic Controllers Association isn't so fond of Reagan's legacy. The union will gather in Washington, D.C. later this month to urge members of Congress to hire and train more air traffic controllers. The NATCA says it needs to avert a national shortage of air traffic controllers. The Federal Aviation Administration anticipates a shortfall nationwide of up to 50% in the next 10 years.
Discouraged workers are defined by the federal government as unemployed people who are no longer actively seeking work. And according to a new study of the state of young adults in America published by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, young people may make up the fastest growing population of discouraged workers. 3.8 million Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 were neither in school nor working in 2002, the latest year for which data is available for study. That's one out of every six 18 to 24-year-olds in the nation, and it represents an increase of nearly 20% in the number of disconnected young adults from 1999. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a team of psychiatrists and behavioral scientists at Emory University, we love money more when we work for it. The researchers performed MRI scans on the brains of two groups of volunteers. One group received money for doing nothing, while the other had to work for payment. They found the pleasure center of the brains of those who worked for their cash showed a higher level of stimulation when they got paid as compared to those who got money for nothing.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
You might remember way back in ancient history as a corporate reformer. He puffed out his chest, focused his beady eyes right into the TV camera, and said that he was sending, quote, a clear message to every dishonest corporate leader. You will be exposed and you will be punished. Strong words. But as happens so often with W, he talks big but wilts when it comes to action. For example, one specific promise he's made repeatedly is that he'll get tough with corporate tax cheats. But an independent analysis of IRS data by experts at Syracuse University finds that there has been a sharp decline of such tax enforcement under Bush, with fewer audits, fewer prosecutions, and fewer penalties. During the last decade, IRS audits of the largest corporations have fallen almost by half, and the agency's enforcement focus in Bush's tenure has shifted from corporations and wealthy investors to you-know-who, us ordinary working stiffs. This comes at a time when corporate sharpies have created all sorts of new tax dodges, allowing these scofflaws to shrink their tax payments to historically low levels. The General Accounting Office reports that in the 4 years prior to Bush's term, 60% of large corporations paid no income taxes. Zero. Since then, George has steadily whacked at the corporate tax rate while also gouging new tax loopholes into the law at the behest of corporate lobbyists. His latest boondoggle is a special interest tax bill that slashes corporate taxes by another $170 billion, including special loopholes for TV and movie producers, liquor distillers, drug companies, and even Oldsmobile dealers. This is Jim Hightower saying, every dollar of taxes that they dodge is a dollar that we you-know-whos have to make up. These wealthy elite are shirking their responsibility to help maintain the society that makes their wealth possible.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from Athens, Greece. Leave it to Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels to create the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. Go to choicehotels.com to learn how to enter, and you can win a trip to the big events in Athens. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Choice Hotels. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system. Well, as you know, Ronald Reagan died last weekend, and the whole week really seems to be devoted to it. His funeral will be on Friday, and it's interesting. I was over the weekend a guest along with a right wing talk show host on a talk show panel, and they asked my thoughts on this, and I have to say. And in fact, I started to write an op-ed piece for Common Dreams about this, I just haven't had time to finish it up. But here's my take on it. I believe that Ronald Reagan was one of our best presidents and one of our worst presidents. Now I know that's probably going to upset half of you in one way and half of you in the other way, and some of you probably in both ways. But here's the problem, or the situation, the reality. Or the situation, the reality. In the United States, uniquely in the United States, actually, by and large, I mean, there are a few exceptions among advanced democracies around the world, but in the United States in particular, there are two functions of governance that are synthesized, that are combined in one person, the presidency. And this doesn't happen in most other countries. For example, and these two functions, by the way, are head of state and head of government. The head of state in Great Britain is the Queen. She's the one who does state functions. She's the one who represents the state at funerals. She's the one who is the once a week, as I recall, I may be wrong on that, but I believe so. Once a week, Tony Blair has to face the House of Commons And they basically get to grill him for a couple of hours, and they rake him over the coals every week, and he has to answer their questions and defend himself. And as head of government, as the executive in charge of the executive branch of government, that's entirely appropriate. And we've had presidents historically who have been particularly good at one or the other. Jimmy Carter, for example, was a very competent head of government. He was very involved in making sure that the details were taken care of. He worked very hard. In fact, some saw it as a defect that he was such a technocrat. He was such a micromanager. Bill Clinton was actually fairly good at both. Although, as you know, those of you who listen to my program regularly, I have some real problems with Bill Clinton having signed the Telecommunications Act, his affiliation with the Democratic Leadership Council, his sucking up to huge multinational corporations, his signing GATT and NAFTA. But in other regards, as head of government, he did what he could, I think, to a remarkable degree, given the kind of political pressures he was facing, to protect the environment, to protect people's right to privacy and so on. He responded to a terrorist bombing in the United States without going hysterical, without going ballistic, without, we're at war, but instead saying, this is a criminal, and let's go after him as a criminal, and so on. And as a head of government, he did a pretty... But he also did a good job as head of state. He knew how to be ceremonial. And, in fact, that is where the Republicans tried to attack him, with the whole Monica thing, turning this second... And it's why it didn't play in Europe. I mean, the last French president stood at the funeral, this was, 6 years ago, of the previous French president, with his wife on one side and his mistress on the other. The Europeans were looking at, Bill and Monica going, who cares? But here in the United States, the Republicans saw that as tarnishing Bill Clinton's image as a head of state, and thus were able to harm his ability to be head of government and, stop things like health care reform and so on. So anyhow, there's these two functions, head of state and head of government. And Ronald Reagan, in my opinion, and I so strongly opposed his policies that it used to make me crazy. Connected, I mean, as head of state, the guy was an actor. How to project the royal persona. He knew how to be a competent head of state. He made a lot of Americans, even those who disagreed with his policies in many ways, proud to be Americans. Even if they disagreed with him, even if they were embarrassed by some of the things he did. He was willing, as head of government, even to change his mind on things. He had this huge tax cut. The cons will always tell you, Reagan passed the biggest tax cut in history. What they won't tell you is that the next year, he realized it wasn't working, it was going to create a disaster, and he passed the largest tax increase in history in the third year of his presidency, followed by six consecutive years of tax increases. As a head of government, he was fairly pragmatic, although still he was giving, lip service to the whole con agenda. We need not go into that. But anyhow, the point that I want to make, and just kind of in memoriam, as it were, as we keep this in mind, is I want to say, as somebody who strongly disagreed with the majority of Reagan's policies, that I thought that he was a brilliant head of state, we all misunderstood him, right, to use George's word. He's just an actor, right? Well, that's what we needed in some regard. I mean, that's what the Queen, they train Prince Charles to be an actor, right? To be a competent spokesperson. It's where George W. Bush is so incompetent. I mean, George W. Bush is glaringly incompetent as a head of state. He has managed to offend virtually the entire world, including allies like France, who without whom we would not be an independent nation. I mean, it was the French help that helped us win the Revolutionary War. 2 centuries of allies. As a head of state, Bush has been incompetent. As a head of government, Bush has been incompetent. Reagan, as a head of state, was in my opinion, very competent. As a head of government, to the extent that I'm you know, setting aside any concerns about his policies, he was moderately competent in areas, in many areas that I strongly disagree with. He did, however, know how to change his mind and you know, could be pragmatic. I mentioned the tax cut. Another one was James Watt. He had appointed James Watt as Secretary of the Interior. James Watt, of course, is on record as saying that the reason why he was selling off Western lands at fire sale prices to buddies of his that then went in and just, you know, raped the land to extract minerals or oil, but mostly minerals, mostly gold mines and whatnot, mineral mines, was that because Jesus was going to return any day now, everything would be made new. And, you know, and others said that, you know, privately he was really of the opinion that because Jesus was going to return every day now, any day now, all the good people were going to go up to heaven in the rapture, and it really didn't matter what he did to the world. Well, he got rid of James Watt, and after that, as the Seattle Post-Intelligencer points out, Reagan signed into law bills protecting 1.9 million acres of wilderness in Washington and Oregon. He signed legislation creating the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument. You know, he initially called the Soviet Union the evil empire, but then he built a relationship. See, this is the head of state part with Gorbachev that led to one of the most, you know, one of the very effective nuclear, it wasn't a test ban treaty, but it was an arms reduction treaty. I forget the name of it. And presided over the you know, the end of the Cold War, which many cons love to give Reagan credit for. The CIA had seen it coming two decades earlier. Anybody who'd ever been to the Soviet Union or any of the Soviet states, the satellite states, knew this thing was rotting from the inside and was going to fall over any day. But nonetheless, he managed the transition with some grace. And so I think that it's important for those of us who consider ourselves in the center or on the left, who didn't think that Reagan was a good president in terms of the policies that he pursued, who didn't agree with his conservative worldview, who are very upset that he took apart PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association, that he began the assault, the full-bore assault on organized labor, that he began the destruction, the evisceration, the disemboweling of America's middle class. His presidency was the beginning of the end of the golden age of the American middle class. He stopped enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act, allowing mergers and acquisitions that essentially led to an anti-competitive or a non-competitive situation in the United States, where it's increasingly difficult for small entrepreneurs and small and medium-sized businesses to do anything at all without some large behemoth, you know, eating their lunch, stepping on them, crushing them, putting them out of business. You know, we have to acknowledge all those things. And yet, I think at the same time, I'm willing to say, and to say that there were some aspects of Ronald Reagan that I respected. And his optimism, I think, was the number one thing. I think that on the right and the left, we need this. Following the Marine barracks in Lebanon and after the Iran-Contra scandal. Remember when George Bush was asked, have you ever made a mistake? And he, Well, here's what Reagan said. He said, this happened on my watch. If there's to be blame, it properly rests here in this office and with this president, and I accept responsibility for the bad as well as the good. Can you imagine George Bush being enough of a statesman to say something like that? I can't. So, anyhow, his funeral's coming up here, and everybody's talking about it. You know, it's going to be this is Reagan week, and I just wanted to be on the record about that. I see two sides to it. I frankly do, as partisan or as whatever you want to call it, as I am. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was to bring the Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abyss cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I've heard that other countries are down on the U.S., a land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai. I refuse to live that way. And I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103. And I'll gladly park so close to you, when you pull out you can't see. No, I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV.
There you go. Now, see, that's the problem. That is the world. And policy-wise, that is the world that Ronald Reagan brought us. As head of government, Ronald Reagan was a disaster. He in many ways terribly harmed the United States and the world, from the Iran-Contra deal to his variations on the war on drugs, increasing government while he was saying he was diminishing it. He stood by while Saddam was gassing the Kurds. Remember, it happened on his watch. When 200 American soldiers were killed in Lebanon, he said, well, let's ignore that. We don't want to get involved in that. His one big military victory was invading Grenada. The Contra thing, of course, was illegal. I mean, there were felonies. More people were convicted and prosecuted and convicted during Reagan's administration for high crimes and misdemeanors, for felonies, members of his administration, than any other administration in the history of the United States. It was incredibly corrupt. And yet, the point that I'm making, the chat room is going nuts. They're saying, how can you defend Reagan? The point that I'm making is that I believe that optimism, that holding a positive vision, even if it's the wrong vision, is more important than the kind of stuff that we've got now at George W., which is angry belligerence and self-righteousness. And that's that head of state part. And I think, Reagan, as an actor, did that very competently. He did that very competently. Although, this year we will pay $173 billion in interest on the deficit that he ran up. All the cons love to say, oh, well, he gave us, years of prosperity. Yeah, right. Give me a $1 trillion credit card that my grandchildren have to pay off, and I'll show you prosperity. That's, Ronald Reagan did that. And then, of course, backpedaled from it. George Bush is trying to do it again. Voodoo economics. Like I said, his presidency in many regards was a disaster. But I think as a head of state, I have to acknowledge, I just think it would be dishonest not to, have to acknowledge that for many Americans who are feeling a lot of despair about the future and about the state of the world and the state of the United States, Reagan gave them some hope, and perhaps false hope, but anyhow, I thought it was a good thing. 27 minutes past the hour. Armin from Florida is on the line. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our number. Hey, Armin, you want to take me apart on this?
No, not really. What I want to say is back in the 80s, especially the early 80s when Reagan won the election, I was 20 years younger and a hell of a lot stupider than I am now. And, I used to fall for the headlines, not unlike a lot of people that fall for Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've become, a heck of a lot more educated and knowledgeable and dug into these issues and looked at beyond the headlines and pretty much the whole story and how it plays out in our culture and society, I've formed a distinctively different opinion of the guy or man.
Yeah, you want to wrap it up because we got about 10 seconds left here.
I'd have to say he was probably a better actor as a president than as an actor, and basically what he, in my opinion, did is he turned the keys of the United States over to the international crime syndicates.
Yeah, and the multinational corporations. Absolutely, I agree with you, and that's the point that I'm making. And at the same time, he had the ability to project something positive, and I miss that, frankly, in our presidency. And I see that. I see John Kerry actually working on that, talking about a positive vision for America. And that's something that I think is absolutely essential. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
People who work for the government of the city of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, have been banned from talking about city business with anyone outside the government. So says a declaration handed down by the acting city manager, who found himself embarrassed when the police department released information on planned staffing cuts to the media. Some city workers have protested what they call a gag order by taping their mouths at city meetings.
They are in violation of the law. And if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they will be terminated.
Ronald Reagan died over the weekend, leaving behind a legacy of huge budget deficits, increased military spending, and union busting. In 1981, his first year in office, the former president fired more than 11,000 striking air traffic controllers, destroying PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association. It's a move lauded by conservative Washington Post columnist George Will.
That really set the tone of the 80s for wealth creation, and it was good for labor. Because a nation that can fire workers will hire them.
But the National Air Traffic Controllers Association isn't so fond of Reagan's legacy. The union will gather in Washington, D.C. later this month to urge members of Congress to hire and train more air traffic controllers. The NATCA says it needs to avert a national shortage of air traffic controllers. The Federal Aviation Administration anticipates a shortfall nationwide of up to 50% in the next 10 years.
Discouraged workers are defined by the federal government as unemployed people who are no longer actively seeking work. And according to a new study of the state of young adults in America published by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, young people may make up the fastest growing population of discouraged workers. 3.8 million Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 were neither in school nor working in 2002, the latest year for which data is available for study. That's one out of every six 18 to 24-year-olds in the nation, and it represents an increase of nearly 20% in the number of disconnected young adults from 1999. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a team of psychiatrists and behavioral scientists at Emory University, we love money more when we work for it. The researchers performed MRI scans on the brains of two groups of volunteers. One group received money for doing nothing, while the other had to work for payment. They found the pleasure center of the brains of those who worked for their cash showed a higher level of stimulation when they got paid as compared to those who got money for nothing.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. It is time for our Bush flip-flop of the day. Condoleezza Rice testimony. Bush spokesman says Rice won't testify as a matter of principle, and we never compromise principle. Again, Scotty McClellan says, this is not her personal preference. This goes back to a matter of principle. There is a separation of powers issue involved here. Historically, White House staffers do not testify before legislative bodies. A small lie on Scotty's part, by the way. So it's a matter of principle, not a matter of preference. And then, of course, Bush flip-flopped. Bush orders Rice to testify. As he said on March 30th, quote, today I have informed the Commission on Terrorist Attacks Against the United States that my National Security Advisor, Dr. Condoleezza Rice, will provide public testimony. Our Bush flip-flop of the day. So, that moving right along. Our other interesting event of the day, these daily things here. By the way, our contest is still going. If anybody can name one piece of legislation that has been proposed by this administration and passed into law by the House and the Senate and signed into law by the President in the entire 3.5 years of George W. Bush's presidency, ever since he was selected and appointed, that benefits primarily democracy and or we the people over corporate interests, you will win We up to this point, we've been giving away one copy of We the People, Call to Take Back America, my new book. I'll toss in a second book. We'll make it two now. I mean, I got up the ante here. I'll also give you a copy of Unequal Protection, another book, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. So we have two books now, is the end. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. And it's got to be real. You know, it's got to be real. We're not going to take any cutie things, you know, like that. Okay, now time for our update on the GOP 2000 platform. Those statements of principle that the grand old party, the Republicans, said this is what we are going to run on in the 2000 through 2004 period if our candidate, George W., gets elected. Here we have the GOP platform chided the Clinton administration. Chided isn't quite the strong enough word. They blasted the Clinton administration for not supporting the Iraqi National Congress headed by Ahmed Chalabi. Of course, this was because the CIA back in 1996, great article about this in the New Yorker this week, by the way, back in 1996 said Chalabi is a fraud, a phony, essentially, and, you know, refused to have anything to do with him. Wolfowitz and Pearl had a slightly different opinion, which is why we're in Iraq right now, in part. I mean, you know, it's part of the justification that was used. But the CIA said, you know, this guy is, and the Clinton administration, this guy is toxic. I mean, he was convicted of bank fraud in Jordan and sentenced to 22 years of hard labor. Anyhow, this a platform plank from the GOP 2000 campaign platform. This the quote, the Clinton administration has used an arsenal of dilatory tactics, that's delaying tactics, to block any serious support of the Iraqi National Congress, an umbrella organization reflecting a broad and representative group of Iraqis who wish to free their country from the scourge of Saddam Hussein's regime. End of quote from the 2000 platform. The update, of course, here just as an example, the May 25th, 2004 Guardian. A headline, U.S. intelligence fears Iran duped hawks into Iraq war. Inquiry into Tehran's role in starting conflict. Top Pentagon aide Chalabi accused. The Guardian says an urgent investigation has been launched in Washington into whether Iran played a role in manipulating the U.S. into the Iraq war by passing on bogus information to Ahmed Chalabi's irrational National Congress. The irrational Iraqi National Congress. Larry Johnson, a former senior counterterrorism official at the State Department, said, quote, when the story ultimately comes out, we'll see that Iran has run one of the most masterful intelligence operations in history. They persuaded the U.S. and Britain to dispose of their greatest enemy. Our GOP 2000 platform, Bizarro of the Day. And every day we'll have another one for you, along with another Bush flip-flop, because there are so many that we can keep it probably going for the 148 days between now and the election. Day 315 of the Wilson plame outing, as it were, 1,005 days since 9/11. And time goes on. Anyhow, I want to get into a slightly different issue here. And this is this concept of a nation of bystanders. The Roper poll has showed that the number of Americans, and this, the Pauline Arreguilla wrote a piece for the AP that I thought was great about this. It was in our Sunday paper. And it points back in some ways, it reflects, there's a book called Bowling Alone, The Death of the Bowling League, and which started out as an article originally, I believe, in The Atlantic. The book is excellent. I read it a couple of years ago. And this kind of harkens back to that. The Roper polls, the number of Americans who worked for a political party fell 42% between 1973 and 1994. The number of Americans who attended a public meeting fell 35% during that same period of time. The number of Americans who wrote to one of their representatives fell 23%. The number of Americans who signed a petition fell 22%. We have become a nation of non-participants. And as a result, the loud minority, the Falwells, the Terry, the Reeds, the cranks, get their voices out, and the rest of us, not so much. What's happened? Why might this be? Some people suggest it's because the what they refer to as the greatest generation or the long civic generation, the generation that actually lived through the difficulties of the Great Depression, the horrors of the Great Depression, saw the transformation of American economics and politics by FDR's New Deal. I mean, actually saw a government. One of Reagan's famous sayings is, government is the problem, not the solution. He was absolutely wrong in that regard. And time and history prove it over and over and over again. And none of the founders would have agreed with him on that. And that generation saw FDR come in and you know, by passage of the Wagner Act in 1935, by putting people back to work through the WPA, even if it was government work over the short term, what it did was it drove demand-side economics, you know, what has been considered rational economics for hundreds of years. The only two administrations that have ever subscribed to supply-side economics, Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush, both of them blowing the debt out the top, harming America for decades, generations. Anyhow, one of the suggestions is that generation that remembered the Great Depression, that saw government actually transform America and bring us out of a depression that there was a pretty good consensus by 1929, 1930, had been caused by corporate excesses in the Roaring Twenties. That generation saw the power of government to transform in a positive way and got involved. And then, of course, they fought World War II, and they offered their lives to their country in defense of their country. Both Germany and Japan had actually declared war on us. We were attacked at Pearl Harbor. There were German submarines that were taken out off the coast of, you know, off the east coast of the United States. Most people don't know that, but at least one submarine. And, you know, there was a very real concern that Germany was going to come after us eventually. So some folks suggest that the death of that generation, that so many of the people from that generation are now in their 70s, 80s, 90s, and so many have passed on. I mean, you know, 1,000 World War II vets a day are dying. That's why people aren't involved anymore. I think there might be something to that. Some are suggesting that it has to do with suburbia. You know, suburbia was something that was essentially invented in the 1950s. Prior to that, you either lived in the city or the country. And in the city, it was very easy to get involved. I live in a small town here in Vermont. We walk into town, we have town meetings, we get involved. And if you lived out in the country, there were organizations that people participated in, the Grange, the Moose, the Elk, well, in the cities as well. People got together. People were interdependent. Not so much now. And suburbia, I mean, it's not unusual in suburban America for people literally not to know their next-door neighbors. So could that be it? Could it be that people are just too busy? You know, could it be that people are hiring others to do their thinking and lobbying for them? Like the AARP, 35 million members. How many of those members ever do anything? Very few. Mostly just they send in their $12 a year. Well, here's my take on it. I think that what has happened is that because of the explosion in corporate financing, in money, in politics, in corporate money specifically, because, and again, this dates back to the failings of Ronald Reagan and his conservative philosophy, which was basically hand the keys of government over to corporations. Large corporate, not small and medium-sized corporations, big corporations. That because of the pervasive influence of big money now in government, that the average citizen figures, hey, you know, my senator's not going to listen to me unless I enclose a $10,000 check. Why should I bother writing a letter? My congressman is not going to pay any attention to me. The president isn't going to pay any attention to me unless I become a ranger and raise $200,000 for him. And that's something that, you know, when you look at other countries where there still is a high level of involvement, see, it's you'd say, well, okay, the generation of the Great Depression has died off. That's also true of many European countries. And yet, in many European countries, they still have high levels of civic involvement. You say, well, it's because people are watching TV too much. In European countries, they still have high levels of civic involvement. What's the difference? The difference is that in many countries, in Sweden and Norway and many of the Scandinavian countries, for example, political campaigns are entirely funded by the public purse. You know, if each one of us, if every taxpayer in America, the 125 million more or less taxpayers in America, put in $5 a year, you know, just check that little box on the tax thing. I think it's at $3 now. If we took it up to $5, we would raise about $750-800 million every year. So every 4 years for the presidential election cycle, that's close to $3 billion, maybe a little over $3 billion. What's 8 times 4? 8 and 16, 32. Yeah, $3.2 billion. I mean, we could certainly spread that over a 4 year period. We could finance public elections. It would bring the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker into politics. That's one solution. Another is to do what they do in the United Kingdom and say, if you want to run for the House of Commons, you can spend up to £100,000 and that's it. You can't spend any more. So why bother raising it? You know, very severely limit that. Now there, you know, of course, the problem is the First Amendment. It says, you know, people have the right of free speech. And we would have to figure out a way to preserve the right of free speech and have public financing of elections. But I think it can be done. I think it can be done in the context of the United States Constitution. And people feel politically helpless. You know, it's the same thing as parents who are trying to stop their kids from smoking. I remember when our youngest was 13. She's 22 now. I remember when she was 13 years old. And, you know, she came home one day and we found a pack of cigarettes. Yeah, I don't remember where Louise found it, you know, in her clothes or on her dresser or whatever. And we really didn't want our kids to smoke. I mean, we had both smoked when we were young. Back then, you knew it was bad, but we had no idea that this stuff is 5 times more addictive than heroin and how incredibly destructive it is. And Wilson Harrell, the guy who wrote For Entrepreneurs Only, this brilliant, brilliant entrepreneur, he started Inc. magazine, had become a friend of ours. In large part because he had gotten on this bandwagon of, you know, entrepreneurs have to have ADD, blah, blah, blah. Anyhow, he was over at our house one evening, him and his wife, Charlene. And we were talking about this, you know, how can a parent deal with a multi-billion dollar industry that spends hundreds of millions of dollars just spiffing the movie industry to have stars smoke on stage? Not to mention, you know, Joe Camel and everything else. How can parents compete with that? And we were feeling that same helplessness that I think a lot of Americans feel now in the face of corporate money and politics. And Wilson said, well, what I did was I told my kids when they were teenagers, before they were 16, if I find any evidence whatsoever that you're smoking, even a book of matches, it's 6 months between the time that you turn 16 and the time that I'll allow you to take the driver's license test. Because you can do that in most states up until a kid is 18. Up until they're 18, they need parental approval. And we thought, oh, that's interesting. So we sat our youngest down and we said, you know, okay, we've caught you once. If we catch you with any evidence whatsoever that you've been smoking, that's it. 6 months later, you know, there's a 6-month delay before you get to take your driver's license test. And sure enough, about a month later, Louise found a pack of cigarettes in her clothes, and she gave all the excuses you would expect. Oh, it was, I was just holding them for a friend, you know, like that. Nope, sorry, doesn't matter. 6 months off. And about 2 months later, we found a book of matches. Another 6 months off. She got her driver's license a year late when she was 17, not when she was 16. And when she turned 20 or 21, it was just a year or two ago, we were having a conversation about this, and she said, you know, at first, I was smoking all that time. She said she'd started when she was around 13, and she had been smoking, and she said she didn't actually quit the first time she got caught, but the second time, she quit. In other words, we had empowered ourselves. I think as a nation, we need to empower ourselves. We need to get involved again. You know, take that lesson into politics. Make it larger. It's Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Creatures in the deep ocean adapt to life in a dark and dangerous world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The middle zone of the deep ocean is a very dark place. Little sunlight penetrates to depths of 600 feet or more, and we would find it impossible to see anything down there. On the other hand, deep sea creatures are well suited for survival in this cold, dark world. Tracy Sutton is a marine scientist at the Harbor Branch Oceanographic Institution. He studies animals that live between 600 and 1,000 feet deep, and he says a lot of them can see in the dark.
The eyes of the animals down there, they're modified so that they can see any little available light. So they don't form a real good image, but their eyes are super, super sensitive. Their eyes are more sensitive than any instruments we have to measure light.
Sutton says good eyesight helps predators find their prey. Those other creatures have to take care not to be seen. Sutton says that's not easy because there's nothing to hide behind.
Most of these animals spend their entire lives without seeing a solid object. They don't see the bottom. They don't see the surface. They just float in this midwater zone where there's just nowhere to hide at all.
Since there's nowhere to hide, the creatures of the deep have tried to make themselves harder to see.
The fishes are jet black. Other things are completely transparent. And often when you catch them and you look in a trawl bucket, you can't tell that it's there until you pour it out and then you see, oh, there's lots of stuff in there. It was just transparent.
Sutton says most deep-sea animals are less than a foot long, but they have surprisingly big heads, teeth, and fangs. Food is scarce in the open water, and they need to be able to eat almost anything they can find. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I lived with them on Montague Street in a basement down the stairs. There was music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. We've got just a couple of minutes, a couple of callers here on the line. Let's try and get two calls in anyway. 1-866-889-8894. Before I do that, though, I want to say, people say, okay, how do I get involved? You've all heard me talk about writing letters to the editor, contact your elected officials. Here's the big one. Join a political party or a group. I don't care if it's the Greens, the Progressives, the Democrats, or the Republicans. I mean, we need people infiltrating the Republican Party as well. Join a group, show up, participate, and start subverting them from within. Take over from within. Let's go to Kevin in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. How you doing today?
Great. What's up?
I was listening to what you were just saying before, and I agree with what you said about there's been a lack of participation over the last 25 to 30 years.
Almost a 50% drop right across the board in America.
Yeah, but I there is one thing which I've been talking about this myself for a while, and I have an opinion as to why, and I'm surprised you didn't mention this one.
Okay.
You and I are about the same age. We went through the same things. I got out of school finally in 72, got married.
Can you get to it quickly, Kevin, because I also want to get to Rand.
Started raising the kids. And at the same time, we went through Vietnam and we went through Watergate. It turned people off. You started raising a family. That was your attention.
People got cynical, you think?
I think it's a combination of people getting in and raising a family plus the crap that came out of Vietnam and Watergate.
Yeah.
It turned everybody off, and the corporates took it over with Reagan.
It may well be, and I think you make a good point, Kevin. I appreciate it. I don't disagree. However, I think the biggest thing is that last part, the corporates took it over with Reagan. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan, your final word here for the day?
Yeah.
Quick, for the hour.
One is that in working for a candidate in politics, which I've never really done much before, I'm surprised at how many people just reject the whole thing is out of scope to ask, had talk about candidates in their social meetings and all that kind of stuff. It's hard to get contact. And number two, which kind of fits in with what was mentioned before, is I've heard so many people tell me, well, I don't know anything about your candidates, and he's not going to go anywhere until we see a lot of them on TV.
Yeah, so you're involved with a political candidate. You're out there knocking on doors and doing the work.
Yeah, well, I was in the Clark campaign, and now I'm working for the 7th Congressional District candidate here in Michigan.
That's wonderful. You know, well, keep it up. I mean, you're going to get that kind of feedback from people. You get that kind of, you know, it's like selling insurance, right? I mean, they tell you, you know, you got to knock on you get 100 suspects to get 10 prospects to get one, you know, to get three hot leads to make one sale. I mean, it's a numbers game.
Right.
And
well,
you just keep at it.
Legitimacy is seeing it on the media. That's what really people are seem to be more interested in.
Yeah. Well, then you work to get them on the media. I mean, but. Do not underestimate the power of going door to door. Raymond, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And thanks for being involved in our political system. We need that.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights.
It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
People who work for the government of the city of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, have been banned from talking about city business with anyone outside the government. So says a declaration handed down by the acting city manager, who found himself embarrassed when the police department released information on planned staffing cuts to the media. Some city workers have protested what they call a gag order by taping their mouths at city meetings.
They are in violation of the law. And if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they will be terminated.
Ronald Reagan died over the weekend, leaving behind a legacy of huge budget deficits, increased military spending, and union busting. In 1981, his first year in office, the former president fired more than 11,000 striking air traffic controllers, destroying PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association. It's a move lauded by conservative Washington Post columnist George Will.
That really set the tone of the 80s for wealth creation, and it was good for labor. Because a nation that can fire workers will hire them.
But the National Air Traffic Controllers Association isn't so fond of Reagan's legacy. The union will gather in Washington, D.C. later this month to urge members of Congress to hire and train more air traffic controllers. The NATCA says it needs to avert a national shortage of air traffic controllers. The Federal Aviation Administration anticipates a shortfall nationwide of up to 50% in the next 10 years.
Discouraged workers are defined by the federal government as unemployed people who are no longer actively seeking work. And according to a new study of the state of young adults in America published by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, young people may make up the fastest growing population of discouraged workers. 3.8 million Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 were neither in school nor working in 2002, the latest year for which data is available for study. That's one out of every six 18 to 24-year-olds in the nation, and it represents an increase of nearly 20% in the number of disconnected young adults from 1999. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a team of psychiatrists and behavioral scientists at Emory University, we love money more when we work for it. The researchers performed MRI scans on the brains of two groups of volunteers. One group received money for doing nothing, while the other had to work for payment. They found the pleasure center of the brains of those who worked for their cash showed a higher level of stimulation when they got paid as compared to those who got money for nothing.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Am I the only one who wants to say to Donald Trump, please, Donnie, please take your orange-dyed, bad comb-over hairdo and your grotesquely inflated ego and go away? The Donald, as he likes to be known, is the self-promoting high-society celebrity who vamps shamelessly as a hard-nosed CEO on the reality TV show called The Apprentice. He also has a book out called Trump, How to Get Rich. In both the show and the book, Donnie poses as a very rich, successful businessman. He is rich, but he didn't get there himself. Instead, he got rich the old-fashioned way. He inherited a New York City real estate fortune from his daddy. And as for being a business success, you might want to ask investors in his struggling casino empire about that. Trump Hotel Casino Resorts is the one business venture that he launched on his own. His claim to corporate success. It's crumbling. Worse, it's about to crash. Only 2 weeks after signing a new contract with NBC to pose as a business mogul on The Apprentice for another season, his real-life corporation announced a quarterly loss of $49 million. Indeed, Trump Hotels has never been profitable in its decade-long history, and it is stuck so deeply in some $2 billion of debt that Trump's own auditors say there is substantial doubt about whether it can survive. Donnie says it's not his fault. This has nothing to do with me, he whined. Yoo-hoo, you're Trumpness. You're the CEO and chairman of the board. Investors and analysts lay the blame squarely at the Donald's feet, accusing him of ineffective management, slipshod financial practices, and a lack of competitive business vision. From his own board members and creditors, the CEO is about to hear the trademark phrase he uses on his TV show, "You're fired." This is Jim Hightower saying, it couldn't happen to a more deserving guy. What a fraud.
Hello from Athens, Greece, folks. Now, if you're a big sports fan like me, this is the place to be. They've got them all. Take fencing. My sword of choice is always the foil over the saber in épée. You've got to see it. That's why Connell Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels have created the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. You could win a trip to the big events in Athens. To enter, visit choicehotels.com, or every time you stay at a Connell Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels this summer, you'll get a game piece with a chance to win hundreds of prizes and discounts off your next stay. Wake up a winner. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Well, I'm off to rhythmic gymnastics, where it always comes down to who nails the tightest ribbon snake. Choice Hotel. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The Bush administration proposed a rule. Actually, let's do this right. It's time for our environmental alert. Yes, indeed. That's the Bush administration coming to get the environment, right? The Bush administration had proposed a rule that would free the Department of Defense from federal environmental regulations that protect regulatory birds and allow the military to make its own determination of whether its actions were causing harm to wildlife. Why the Department of Defense is allowed to operate under different rules in the first place? Well, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, enacted in 1918, involves four different countries, Canada, Mexico, Japan, and Russia, to protect numerous migratory birds in their habitats. But the Bush administration has decided we don't need no stinking treaties. In fact, we don't need no stinking birds. The military's push for an exemption, this is from bushgreenwatch.org, by the way, stems from a case in which the U.S. military conducted bombing practice on an island in the Pacific that is the key nesting site for migratory birds, including frigate birds, red-footed boobies, and Pacific golden plovers. The public interest group, interest law firm Earth Justice, successfully argued in federal court that the bombing exercises violated this treaty that I mentioned. The case further raised the ire of conservationists when the Pentagon argued in a legal brief. Do you remember this? The Pentagon actually argued this. Some incredibly bright lawyer, and I'm going to tell you in just a second who this guy is and what has happened to him since then. Some incredibly bright lawyer, this rocket scientist at the Pentagon, part of the member of the Bush administration, went before a federal judge and argued that killing off an extinct, the last remaining members or the last few remaining members of a nearly extinct species of birds would make conservationists happy because, quote, bird watchers get more enjoyment spotting a rare bird than they do spotting a common one, end quote. The man who came up with that argument, William Haynes II, was just nominated by George W. Bush
to a lifetime seat on the Federal Appeals Court. So that our Bush Greenwatch for the day. Moving along, administration officials ignore the hunger. I want to talk about economics for a little bit here. Jobs, you know, what's the future? What's happening? What's happening with us? Where are we going? The Center for American Progress reports that the head of the federal food program, this falls into the category of Reagan's idea that, you know, or the Reagan administration's idea that ketchup is a vegetable. The head of the federal food program under the Bush administration is denying the hunger problem in the United States. Confronted with a recent spike in the number of hungry Americans, U.S. Agriculture Department Secretary or Undersecretary for Food and Nutrition Sources Eric Boast said, quote, "There's a bump," meaning, in other words, there's more people showing up in soup kitchens and homeless shelters and, you know, asking for free food. He says, yeah, there's a bump, but how much of that is due to people taking the easy way out? I don't know. Yeah, right. Can you imagine? Louise, let's take the easy way out tonight. Let's go down to the soup kitchen and have dinner. That's what the Bush administration thinks is responsible for this increase in homeless people using, well, let's, you know, our bedroom is boring. Let's sleep in the shelter tonight. You know, you've been making the same meal a lot lately. Let's go down to the shelter and see what they're offering. Shown a study by his own agency showing a rise in the hungry. This rocket scientist, Eric Boast of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, says, those numbers are probably inflated. Yes, they're inflated by economic policies of the Bush administration. He also said an increase in food stamp recipients and a rise in the number of people in food lines doesn't mean there's more needy people. Say what? There's more people who are eligible for food stamps. There's more people using them. There's more people showing up in soup kitchens. He says that doesn't mean that there's more needy people, because food pantries don't require documentation of income, he said. So there's no proof everyone asking for sustenance at a soup kitchen is truly in need. Our daily mislead, this from misleader.org. Bush ignores wage crisis hitting the middle class. Over the last month, the Bush administration has cited recent job numbers to claim that average workers' paychecks are increasing. You've heard this. You know, they get their flacks on the radio all the time and on TV, and they're all, you know, it's getting better out there. For example, Vice President Cheney, in a speech on May 21st, said, quote, real incomes and wages are growing, end quote. Well, yeah, if you're talking about CEOs, if you're talking about Cheney's buddies, if you're talking about people who were born rich, inherited wealth, or, you know, the few who actually made it rich. You know, it's funny. Donald Trump is trumpeted as this great entrepreneur. But he actually made his money the old-fashioned way in America. He inherited a multi-million dollar real estate empire from his father. The vast majority of the wealthy in America are not entrepreneurs who made it to the top. It's a wonderful American myth. But in the last 20 years, there's been actually less social mobility than in the previous 60. But I digress. According to the Economic Policy Institute, while corporate profits have risen by more than 62%, workers' take-home pay has, get this, Dick Cheney, dropped by 0.6%. This was a Economic Policy Institute economic snapshots, when do workers get their share? This was published May 27th of 2004. This follows an earlier report which shows that industries currently adding jobs pay 21% less than industries that are slashing jobs. Despite this wage crisis, President Bush is pushing to cut off An estimated 8 million workers from overtime pay protections and supports efforts to outsource even more well-paid American jobs. Meanwhile, he refuses to raise the minimum wage, despite new research showing a minimum wage hike would not adversely affect businesses or consumers. It doesn't take, by the way, new research to do that. You just go back and you look at the history of the minimum wage from the 1930s when it was first enacted, and every single time the minimum wage goes up, unemployment actually goes down, and general economic activity, GDP, gross domestic product, you know, general activity, all the measurements of general economic activity go up. Why? Because people have more money to spend. And what do they do with that money? Well, I mean, you give tax cuts to the rich, they might build a factory in China, or they might put it in a Swiss bank account. But if you give money to a guy who works in a gas station or a factory or somebody who's an architect or, you know, whatever, somebody who earns their living with a paycheck, they're going to spend it, odds are. And when they spend it, that creates a demand for goods, and that demand for goods creates opportunities for people who want to supply that demand. Opportunities for entrepreneurs, for businesses. Boom, the economy grows. It's called demand-side economics. Adam Smith in 1776 in Wealth of Nations, he wasn't the first to define it. In fact, it wasn't really even the central core of his book. It was an assumption. Back then, everybody knew this. The arguments have been about the subtle variations, you know, David Ricardo's theory of comparative advantage and versus Adam Smith versus Desuet de Tracy, who said that, you know, tax policy has to do with it. You know, what are the little rudders that move the ship a little bit? You know, where are the trim tabs? But everybody agrees. You give money to consumers, you stimulate the economy. Everybody except Reagan and George W. Bush, who believe in voodoo economics. Anyhow, George Bush refuses to raise the minimum wage. The story, of course, is different for the president's wealthy campaign donors. A recent study, published in Reuters on May 12th. A recent study shows CEO pay exploded by 27% in just 1 year, all while the president lavished more than $1 trillion in new tax breaks on the richest 1% of the population. To put the contrast into dollars, the average worker takes home $517 a week and will receive about $400 in tax breaks from President Bush. At the same time, the average CEO takes home $155,769 a week, and this year alone received well over $50,000 in new tax breaks from Bush. So our misleader, outsourcing work overseas. This a report from Michigan. I thought this was fascinating. And this is the Mackinac Policy Conference up on Mackinac Island, dominated by conservatives. And you know, they say, okay, there's going to be more and more outsourcing, and that's going to be a good thing, because we're only going to lose the jobs that get outsourced, and we'll figure out something else. Actually, they're suggesting by 2012, outsourcing of work overseas will cost Michigan more than 46,000 manufacturing jobs. This is just one state. I mean, you could just, you know, extrapolate this right across the United States. The projected job losses will cost the state $1.2 billion in lost wages and retraining efforts. It's a five-month study. It was commissioned by the Detroit Regional Chamber, the Michigan Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Of course, chambers of commerce are notoriously conservative in their politics and their economics. And the Accelerator Group, a private research firm, if I can't speak of them, I don't know them. But Donald Boggs, president of the Metropolitan Detroit AFL-CIO, says, "This is nonsense." That's not a quote. The findings don't hold water, he says. The job loss estimates don't account for the 2 to 6 ancillary jobs lost when a manufacturing position moves overseas. He says this puts profits over people. Yeah, well said. See, the fact of the matter is, a community loses a good paying manufacturing job because of so-called free trade. And you don't just lose one job. You lose on average 6 jobs. because that person is no longer buying things in the local economy, and so there's less activity. They're not buying as many clothes. They're not buying as much food. They're not eating out in restaurants as often. They're not going to as many movies. They're not buying garden supplies. They're not fixing up their house. It goes on and on and on. And all those things have this local echo effect, creating more jobs. Sean McAlden, chief economist at the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor, says, outsourcing is good for Michigan. Give me a break. Well said. Well said. It's the Tom Hubbard radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our number.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
to discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
We'll be right back.
exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
These ideas are nightmares for white parents whose worst fear is a child with dyed hair and who likes hearing. Like whatever they say has no bearing. It's so scary.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This study paid for by these two different chambers of commerce concluded in Michigan, outsourcing has helped local and U.S. companies remain competitive by moving lower-skilled jobs overseas. Right, this is the mantra. Competitive means more profit for the corporation, more money in the hands of those people who make their living by sitting on their butts around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, which now, thanks to George W. Bush, they pay no payroll tax on, and they only pay a 15% income tax on. And more money in the hands and pockets of the CEOs that contribute to the Bush campaign. It's just that simple. It does, outsourcing does not help U.S. companies remain competitive. It destroys the competitive qualities, abilities, competencies of American companies. This is wrong. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you would like to be on the program. Philip in Tampa, Florida is on the line. Hey, Philip.
Hi, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, you know, you talk about the issue of unemployment. You hit a sore point with me. There's one issue that, as an unemployed person, and I'm sure there's others who are listening to the show, that's why they have the time to listen, is that I'm finding that the jobs that pay the better money from 50 to 100K, they're not interested in hiring somebody who doesn't have a job. All right?
In other words, they view unemployment as a sign of not being as good a potential worker as somebody who's employed?
Absolutely, especially the headhunters who have most of the good jobs.
Right.
If you're not working right now, they're not going to present you.
Yeah, that stigmatizes you as damaged goods.
Oh, absolutely. So that a lot of the jobs that are open because somebody got fired, somebody retired, somebody went on pregnancy leave and decided not to come back. It's not, they're not a function of jobs created by this economy. That's number one. And number two, in other words, jobs from attrition. And number two, again, if you don't have a job, they're not interested in you.
Yeah.
And that's the better paying jobs. Now, the $5.30 an hour jobs, you know, that's another story. But who the hell can survive on $5.30?
Plus, that doesn't look good on the resume either.
No. Right. But my point is that you know, the media only takes a very, you know, shallow approach to discussing unemployment. They just go with some raw statistics. And yeah. Isn't it interesting, the conservatives who don't trust government do trust the unemployment figures when it's in their favor.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the real issue here, Philip, the larger issue, what we're talking about really are the small consequences of conservative economics. I mean, the policy of saying, hey, you know, we don't need to protect domestic industries with tariffs, even though it's worked for 200 years in the United States, and virtually most other countries in the world do it. China certainly does it.
Oh, you know, big time.
You know, hugely. India does it. You want to import goods into India, good luck. You're going to have to pay tariffs. Most, countries that are signatories of WTO, I mean, and the European countries who are following our lead are now starting to experience the same kind of disastrous results, by the way.
But, it's interesting. There was a story in the paper, and it really, when people get up in income, they don't care. There was a steel magnate from India whose daughter is getting married, and he's going to spend $55 million on her wedding. Now, how many people in India are starving to death from disease and everything else.
Yeah.
He's going to drop $55 million on a wedding, and he's not even going to have it in India. It's going to be in France.
Yeah.
So the people in India who don't benefit from his wealth I'm going to benefit from him dropping $55 million on a wedding either to be,
yeah,
you know, and
the
work
two,
at the wedding.
And the two sides of this are, on the one hand, we don't want to say, we don't want people to be allowed to accumulate wealth and spend it any way they damn well please. And on the other hand, as Thomas Jefferson said, there is a point at which excessive wealth becomes dangerous to democracy,
yeah,
and we really should have a far more progressive income tax, as we had during the golden era of America's middle class. Phil, thanks for the call.
All right.
Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
People who work for the government of the city of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, have been banned from talking about city business with anyone outside the government. So says a declaration handed down by the acting city manager, who found himself embarrassed when the police department released information on planned staffing cuts to the media. Some city workers have protested what they call a gag order by taping their mouths at city meetings.
They are in violation of the law. And if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they will be terminated.
Ronald Reagan died over the weekend, leaving behind a legacy of huge budget deficits, increased military spending, and union busting. In 1981, his first year in office, the former president fired more than 11,000 striking air traffic controllers, destroying PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association. It's a move lauded by conservative Washington Post columnist George Will.
That really set the tone of the 80s for wealth creation, because, and it was good for labor. Because a nation that can fire workers will hire them.
But the National Air Traffic Controllers Association isn't so fond of Reagan's legacy. The union will gather in Washington, D.C. later this month to urge members of Congress to hire and train more air traffic controllers. The NATCA says it needs to avert a national shortage of air traffic controllers. The Federal Aviation Administration anticipates a shortfall nationwide of up to 50% in the next 10 years.
Discouraged workers are defined by the federal government as unemployed people who are no longer actively seeking work. And according to a new study of the state of young adults in America published by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, young people may make up the fastest growing population of discouraged workers. 3.8 million Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 were neither in school nor working in 2002, the latest year for which data is available for study. That's one out of every six 18 to 24-year-olds in the nation, and it represents an increase of nearly 20% in the number of disconnected young adults from 1999. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a team of psychiatrists and behavioral scientists at Emory University, we love money more when we work for it. The researchers performed MRI scans on the brains of two groups of volunteers. One group received money for doing nothing, while the other had to work for payment. They found the pleasure center of the brains of those who worked for their cash showed a higher level of stimulation when they got paid as compared to those who got money for nothing.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Road again, just can't wait to get on the road again.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast The Second Coming. The Village Voice had an interesting piece a couple of days ago. I wanted just to bring this up. You know, there are a lot of Democrats who are saying, you know, if John Kerry would get John McCain as his running mate, he would have a unity ticket. He'd sweep the election. America, you know, wonder, blah, blah, blah. Well, setting aside the fact that John McCain is an unrepentant conservative and proud of it, he's one of the few that I would consider actually, I know it may sound like an oxymoron, but an ethical conservative. That is to say, he actually has a coherent worldview that he believes in. I believe he's wrong, but he believes he's right. In fact, I would say history shows that in many regards he's wrong, although in some he's probably right. But in any case, he is not a Democrat. He's not a liberal. And all these Democrats are talking about, oh, if John McCain would just get on the ticket with Kerry. Well, first of all, I think that, you know, it ain't going to happen. McCain wouldn't do it. I don't think Kerry would want it. But here's the gotcha. The speculation about all this, you'll recall a year ago, literally a year ago on this program, I predicted that at the Republican National Convention in September of 2004, that Dick Cheney, in large part because of the liability of his, you know, I mean, he basically has been running the White House. He's been the president in you know, George is the president in puppet, and Cheney is the president in fact, many suggest. And his policies have been disastrous, both economically and particularly with regard to Iraq. His relationship with Halliburton, he still owns millions of dollars worth of stock options, which are going up in value as Halliburton gets more and more government contracts. He's still drawing a deferred salary from Halliburton. Every year he gets a couple $100,000 from Halliburton. They owe him millions, by the way, in deferred salary. He's taking it in smaller chunks, you know, $160,000 last year. It looks better. But it just as easily could have been $1 million or $2 million. Anyhow, what I've been suggesting is that Dick Cheney is becoming a liability. The people perceive him as sort of the dark force. And if George Bush is in trouble, as increasingly it's looking like he is, that Cheney is going to back out. And what I had been suggesting, what I suggested a year ago, was that Rudy Giuliani was going to step in and be George Bush's running mate. And he would be, you know, the coronation would occur in New York City. And we'll see. We'll see. I mean, you know, Cheney is still saying that he's running, but for some reason, most of the ads show George and Laura. Actually, most of the ads the Bush administration has put out are lies about John Kerry. Yeah, I use that word specifically. It's, you know, the Washington Post has outed them. They continue to run them, nonetheless. But anyhow, what if George Bush was to ask John McCain to run with him? This is, a CBS poll. According to a recent CBS poll, running McCain with Kerry would boost the Democrats' standing by 14%, putting Kerry way ahead of Bush. But matching up McCain with Bush would substantially help George Bush's chances of running. I frankly think that John McCain was so badly burned by George Bush when in South Carolina, you know, McCain won the New Hampshire primary in 2000. And it looked like he was going to become the Republican nominee. And the next pivotal state was South Carolina. They got down there to South Carolina, and Karl Rove comes down and he hires these phone banks. And they got a list of all these prospective Republican voters who are primary voters. And they call them up and they say, it's called push polling. They call them up and they say, how would it affect your vote if you knew that John McCain had a child out of wedlock with a black woman? This in South Carolina. How would it affect your vote if you knew that John McCain was mentally unstable as a consequence of having been a prisoner of war for 5 years in Vietnam? and had received, psychiatric treatment or was continuing to receive it. How would it affect your vote if you knew that John McCain's wife was unfaithful to her husband and was mentally ill? Now, these are actually the questions that they asked. They never said that any of these things were facts. They simply asked these questions. And McCain went from being way ahead of George Bush in South Carolina to losing to him. And that was the turning point. That was the point at which George Bush basically sewed up the Republican nomination. And I really, everything I sense is that McCain has never forgiven him for that and never will. On the other hand, if McCain was given the vice presidency, it would mean that in 4 years he could run for president, which is something that we know he wants to do, and he might be willing to swallow his pride to do it. So, interesting. I just wanted to toss that out. I thought it was an interesting idea. We'll see how it goes. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chris in, Chris, I dropped you. I'm sorry. Chris in New Mexico was on the line. Chris, give us a call back, and I'll put you back on. I'm pushing buttons here so fast they're vanishing. I wanted to share with you some, get back into the economic stuff here. The Alan Greenspan, I like talking about Greenspan because he is the poster boy for the libertarian right-wing fringe of the Republican Party economically. Now, there's a lot of, unfortunately, there are a lot of liberals and Democrats and independents who think that the libertarians are somehow, less toxic, good, not destructive, whatever, because they're in favor of decriminalizing drugs and prostitution. They say, whatever you do in private ought to be legal. Government should get out of our bedrooms and that kind of thing. But what most people don't realize is that they're also largely in favor of turning governance of the United States over to large corporations and into bankrupting the government, into even privatizing things like fire services. The fire department is socialism. We can't have that. And so on January 25th, 2001, Alan Greenspan, as Paul Krugman points out on June 6th, leaped into politics by endorsing Bush's tax cuts. And now that Bush's tax cuts have created this extraordinary debt and deficit, a deficit that is adding to our debt, Greenspan, instead of doing the right thing and saying, we ought to roll back the tax cuts, we really should have a balanced budget, is saying, let's cut Social Security. There never really was a surplus at the end of the Clinton administration. Everybody talked about it. The surplus, it did not occur in the general fund. The surplus occurred in the Social Security fund. That's what Al Gore kept talking about, the lockbox. Nobody got it. He didn't communicate that effectively. And they've been using, and Bush has been spending that Social Security surplus in the general fund to reduce the amount of the deficit, the apparent deficit. Things are actually much worse than they look. And Greenspan is now saying, okay, let's cut Social Security, or let's privatize it. The con agenda, my friends, it's like Freddy Krueger. It's back. 18 minutes before the hour, Chris in New Mexico, this time I pushed the right button. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Tom. Did you hear that Ronald Reagan died?
Yeah.
Okay. actually, I got a chance to talk to John McCain last week. On another radio program, Jim Bohannon had him on. He's pushing a book, so you might be able to get him. But actually got the senator to admit that the Bush administration is peopled by people who are largely not conservatives at all.
Sure.
They're
radicals. Conservatives, by definition, are in favor of slow, small, gradual, incremental change. And the Bush administration, very much, they're radicals. They're radical.
I agree. I agree. Talking about what they did to McCain and what the Lee Atwater, Karl Rove model of character assassination, winning votes through character assassination of your opponent, it's interesting because I don't think they've ever done this model over a 7-month period like they're trying to do now with John Kerry. I mean, usually this this sort of thing, that length of time, or if people are going to get really sick of it.
Well, A, it's already working. I mean, yeah. You know, it's 49% of people think that John Kerry has proposed a 50-cent increase in gas taxes. He has never proposed that ever in his whole entire life. In one magazine article 11 years ago, somebody asked him, you know, what do you think should be done about the energy shortage? Do you think that a gas tax, you know, 50-cent increase in gas taxes would be a good idea? And he said something to the effect of, well, it would reduce consumption and it may be a good idea. It's something we should probably look at and talk about. But he didn't, you know, it wasn't, even that wasn't an endorsement. And he has certainly never taken that position. And yet the Bush administration is putting it out as if he had actually proposed legislation about this, which is simply not true.
Well,
and yet 49% of people polled think that he actually proposed legislation.
Yeah, wants to respond.
Yeah.
And
get one, I'm astounded that Kerry is not rebutting these ads.
Yeah.
He ought to be going after them with both barrels. You know, these are lies. This is wrong. How dare you lie about my record? Although there is something to be said for that, then allows the Republicans to define the agenda, and they just keep throwing lies, and he keeps responding to them, and then you're in constant response mode, and there is a downside to that, a tremendous downside to that. Number one. Number two, I suspect you may well be right. Over time, people are going to wake up, and Kerry's ads, by and large, have been, you know, 70 some odd percent of them positive, optimistic. He's following, in many ways, Reagan's model. You know, morning in America, we can do better than that, a proud America. And number three, what I would say, Chris, and this is the thing that I don't think that you're putting into the equation, is I don't think that we've seen anything close to the kind of character assassination that Karl Rove is capable of.
Oh,
and,
that's true.
And I suspect that in the final 3 weeks of the election, it's going to happen.
You ought to talk to Richard Clark. He'd know something about it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for the call, Chris. Yeah, Richard Clark or Joe Wilson or John McCain for that matter. Walmart, the welfare recipient. A new report released from Good Jobs First shows that Walmart, the world's largest retailer, has received more than $1 billion in economic development subsidies from states for its stores and distribution centers. The subsidies have come. Now, you try this, right? You go to the state government and say, hey, if I locate myself in your state, will you give me $1 billion or $1 million or even $1,000? How about $20? The subsidies have come as many states are forced by White House tax cuts and reductions in federal grants to make tough budget decisions. States are cutting subsidies. This from an article by David Sirota, you know, the Center for American Progress folks, published on Alternet. The subsidies have come as many states are forced by White House tax cuts and reductions in federal grants to make tough budget decisions. States are cutting subsidies for publicly funded health insurance. They're cutting child care. They're cutting federal unemployment benefits. These are being cut, and they're forcing states to cut back on unemployment benefits. The states are cutting both high education, you know, subsidies to colleges and universities, and lower education, public schools. They're cutting programs that aimed at public safety, laying off cops, not equipping them with the new equipment that they need, reducing the ability, the competence, and the ability of firefighters to deal with domestic emergencies and terror attacks. And in the face of all of this, oh, and they're cutting programs aimed at people with disabilities. In the face of all this, a corporation that took in $200 billion in revenue last year and showed a $9 billion profit has received $1 billion in corporate welfare from the various states. Even as it pays workers near poverty wages, drives out of business local companies, and has violated environmental regulations repeatedly. Walmart, by the way, number one, you probably started notice that they started advertising in the media a lot. There's, in my opinion, there's two reasons for this. One is they're hoping that if they dump enough money into, it's just like with politics. If you dump enough money into public radio, they're less likely to run expose pieces on you. If you sponsor enough CBS programming, they're less likely to do a 60 Minutes expose on you. If you dump enough money in local station advertising, excuse me, they're less likely to point out, you know, the destructive nature of your being there. I mean, why, after all, do you think that oil companies are advertising? You want to buy an oil well? You want to buy an oil drilling platform? I don't think so. No, it's to try to influence coverage. So anyhow, they're getting out there and doing this, number one. Number two, Walmart has become one of the largest and most aggressive, after years and years of almost no political activity, one of the largest, most aggressive lobbying groups on Capitol Hill and passers out of political funds. And one of the main things that they're pushing is tort reform. Let's end class action lawsuits, the ability of the little guy to sue the big corporation. Why? Because the corporation in America that has been on the receiving end of the most class action lawsuits in the United States, not the tobacco companies, Walmart. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. Results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Shifting to renewable energy could create more than 1 million high-paying jobs. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. 13 separate studies have recently looked at the potential impact of renewable energy development on the U.S. economy. They vary in their methods and focus, but all agree on one thing. Solar, wind, biomass, and other renewable technologies could create a lot of new jobs. Daniel Kamen is an energy expert at the University of California at Berkeley. He recently evaluated those 13 studies.
The low-end estimates are that there would be maybe 500,000 new jobs by doing this. And the high-end estimates are a couple million new jobs.
Kamen's own assessment falls right in the middle. 1.2 million new jobs if we meet 20% of our future energy needs with renewable energy and efficiency programs.
And that's job growth above and beyond what you would get if you simply met that new 20% of energy mix from more fossil fuels. So this really is talking about job growth, not just sort of job substitution or replacement.
And they'd be good jobs, according to Kamen.
These are high-tech manufacturing-type jobs. These are what most economists consider to be high-quality jobs, both in terms of wages and in terms of career paths, and also jobs that are really productive for the economy.
Kamen says most of those jobs could not be outsourced to other countries, and he says a boost in biomass fuels would strengthen the American farm economy. But Kamen says this won't happen by itself. He says we need a major revision of national energy policy to provide rewards and incentives for renewable energy and efficiency. And he says we're missing an opportunity to cut our dependence on foreign oil and put a lot of people back to work. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Remember when old ones died and new were born, life was changed.
Remember when you could raise a family on a single salary, pay for health care, put kids through college, and have a retirement?
Fell apart and broke.
Remember when the American middle class was growing? Yeah, that all came to an end with the beginning of the Reagan administration and the ascendancy of trickle-on or trickle-down or trickle-whatever, trickle-tinkle, whatever they call it, economics. The so-called supply-side economics. Anyhow, I remember the golden age of the American middle class. I know my parents remember it. I know some of you remember it, and some of you are young enough that you just have to take the word of us old farts that it was real. And it lasted, you know, they spanned almost two generations. We can do that again. Rural jobs proposal hides other cuts. This week, the Bush administration, this is from the Center for American Progress. The Bush administration, this is another one of these sort of, smile while they slap you kind of things, you know. The Bush administration rolled out a quote, effort to stimulate rural business development. End quote. And create rural jobs by expanding access to venture capital at the Small Business Administration. So, in other words, they were running around saying, hey, guys, we're going to put more money into the SBA, the Small Business Administration, specifically for programs in rural areas, because, you know, a lot of them are being wiped out as these big corporations are coming in with family factory farm operations, and just wiping out family farms. I mean, just wiping them out. And so, you know, you're hearing all this stuff about, you know, or at least in the rural communities and all the news releases that go into the farming publications. We're doing all this wonderful stuff. Isn't it great? What the announcement does not say is that the current Bush budget proposes serious cuts to the Small Business Administration, including eliminating its flagship 7A loan program, which backs 40% of all long-term lending to the country's small businesses. The announcement also did not mention that the first Bush tax cut has left roughly 96% of all small businesses with no benefit whatsoever. This, again, you know, they have to... Conservative economics is so toxic, and people get it when it gets laid out to them. You know, when you tell them what's really going on, it's all about cheap labor, corporate profits, and corporate governance. It's not about government of, by, and for we the people. And people get it, and so they have to lie about it. They have to gussy it up. They have to change it around so that you don't get it. Of course, you're getting it. But the average person doesn't get it. Here we go again. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
People who work for the government of the city of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, have been banned from talking about city business with anyone outside the government. So says a declaration handed down by the acting city manager, who found himself embarrassed when the police department released information on planned staffing cuts to the media. Some city workers have protested what they call a gag order by taping their mouths at city meetings.
They are in violation of the law. And if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they will be terminated.
Ronald Reagan died over the weekend, leaving behind a legacy of huge budget deficits, increased military spending, and union busting. In 1981, his first year in office, the former president fired more than 11,000 striking air traffic controllers, destroying PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association. It's a move lauded by conservative Washington Post columnist George Will.
That really set the tone of the 80s for wealth creation, because it was good for labor. Because a nation that can fire workers will hire them.
But the National Air Traffic Controllers Association isn't so fond of Reagan's legacy. The union will gather in Washington, D.C. later this month to urge members of Congress to hire and train more air traffic controllers. The NATCA says it needs to avert a national shortage of air traffic controllers. The Federal Aviation Administration anticipates a shortfall nationwide of up to 50% in the next 10 years.
Discouraged workers are defined by the federal government as unemployed people who are no longer actively seeking work. And according to a new study of the state of young adults in America published by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, young people may make up the fastest growing population of discouraged workers. 3.8 million Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 were neither in school nor working in 2002, the latest year for which data is available for study. That's one out of every six 18 to 24-year-olds in the nation, and it represents an increase of nearly 20% in the number of disconnected young adults from 1999. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a team of psychiatrists and behavioral scientists at Emory University, we love money more when we work for it. The researchers performed MRI scans on the brains of two groups of volunteers. One group received money for doing nothing, while the other had to work for payment. They found the pleasure center of the brains of those who worked for their cash showed a higher level of stimulation when they got paid as compared to those who got money for nothing.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
You might remember way back in ancient history, back in 2002, when George W. was posing as a corporate reformer. He puffed out his chest, focused his beady eyes right into the TV camera, and said that he was sending, quote, a clear message to every dishonest corporate leader. You will be exposed and you will be punished. Strong words. But as happens so often with W, he talks big but wilts when it comes to action. For example, one specific promise he's made repeatedly is that he'll get tough with corporate tax cheats. But an independent analysis of IRS data by experts at Syracuse University finds that there has been a sharp decline of such tax enforcement under Bush, with fewer audits, fewer prosecutions, and fewer penalties. During the last decade, IRS audits of the largest corporations have fallen almost by half, and the agency's enforcement focus in Bush's tenure has shifted from corporations and wealthy investors to you-know-who, us ordinary working stiffs. This comes at a time when corporate sharpies have created all sorts of new tax dodges, allowing these scofflaws to shrink their tax payments to historically low levels. The General Accounting Office reports that in the 4 years prior to Bush's term, 60% of large corporations paid no income taxes. Zero. Since then, George has steadily whacked at the corporate tax rate while also gouging new tax loopholes into the law at the behest of corporate lobbyists. His latest boondoggle is a special interest tax bill that slashes corporate taxes by another $170 billion, including special loopholes for TV and movie producers, liquor distillers, drug companies, and even Oldsmobile dealers. This is Jim Hightower saying, every dollar of taxes that they dodge is a dollar that we you-know-whos have to make up. These wealthy elite are shirking their responsibility to help maintain the society that makes their wealth possible.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from Athens, Greece. Leave it to Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels to create the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. Go to choicehotels.com to learn how to enter, and you can win a trip to the big events in Athens. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Choice Hotels. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just got our copy of the Eldorado Sun. One of our affiliates, KTRC, I believe it is, in Santa Fe. If you're listening in Santa Fe, New Mexico, I'll be on the cover of your local newspaper coming up this week. I'm assuming it's the June 4th issue, so I'm assuming it's just out. It's an interesting story. New report says more good jobs disappearing. This is quite remarkable. The number of planned layoffs in the United States rose for the second month in a row in May to 73. They did a survey of companies around the United States. How many people do you plan to lay off? 73,368. This is a sharp rise from this time last year. Monthly job cuts in May this year were 6.9% above those in May of 2003. This is nearly 50% above normal levels. Normal being, I guess, subject to interpretation. Compared to three years ago, jobs disappearing pay 25% less than those replacing them. Using a comparison from March 2001 to March 2004, the Economic Policy Institute found that the sectors of the economy that are growing pay salaries that are 25% less than sectors of the economy that are shrinking. This from the Americans Coming Together group. I got an email from Chris in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Tom, I'm usually behind in my shows. Thank goodness for White Rose. That's www.whiterosesociety.org, where there are archives of our programs. So I just listened to your rant on home ownership. I came across the following article from the company that makes software for the mortgage broker industry and thought you'd be interested in the insider perspective. As you mentioned, it's always interesting when we overhear what the corporations are saying to each other. And she says, love the show. Keep up the good work. I'm winning many water cooler battles with your help. Well, well done, Chris. Or maybe he. I'm not sure which gender that Chris is. But anyhow, here's the, this is from the Calix News May Roundup, the headline. This is June 1st story. This is from, you know, one of these companies. They're the subtitle of the website is your online source for mortgage industry news. In other words, this is the mortgage banking industry talking to itself. In anticipation of the Federal Reserve raising benchmark interest rates later this year, mortgage interest rates have already risen 8 consecutive weeks, and more hikes could spur a round of foreclosures, especially in more expensive housing markets. In other words, they're saying, get ready, guys. Markets in California, Nevada, Northeast, and New England states have the most potential for growing foreclosures. Interest rates have already risen from this year's average low of 5.38% for fixed-rate 30-year conforming loans in mid-March to 6.34% the week ending May 13. Economists predict a 6.6% ceiling on rates by year's end. And then they quote Marie McDonald, an Orleans, Massachusetts-based mortgage counselor, saying, quote, there is the potential for trouble ahead. Interest rate increases on adjustable rate mortgages could trigger a wave of foreclosures. Something I have been warning you about for some time now, for almost a year, saying, you know, that we are in the midst of a housing bubble. And if you have a mortgage, please make sure it's a fixed rate mortgage. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. 11 minutes past the hour. And Enrique in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Enrique, how are you today?
Pretty good. And you, Tom?
I am well. What's up?
You know, I wanted to talk about your first hour when you were talking about Ronald Reagan.
Sure.
And, you know, I was wondering, you know, what is the appeal of Ronald Reagan to conservatives? You know, they hold him up as, you know, some type of idol. And, you know, I started thinking about it, and I thought, well, you know, they really haven't had a president that's, you know, that worthy since Abraham Lincoln. You know, if you look back through some of the recent Republican presidents, you
Eisenhower
know,
wasn't
Richard
bad.
Richard Nixon.
Eisenhower wasn't bad. I think, you know,
well,
he was,
yeah, Eisenhower
was good. He was a decent man. He, you know, I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff going on during that era you can point to, but I don't think Eisenhower was a crook, you know, like Nixon.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, before that, Hoover, Herbert Hoover,
yep.
He didn't do too well with the Depression, and I guess Calvin Coolidge wasn't that bad, but. You know, Warren Harding, the guy right before him, had quite a bit of problems with that Teapot Dome scandal.
Yep, Albert Fall.
The
interesting thing is whenever Republicans come into office, the economy goes in the tank, and Reagan reversed that. I think that's one of the things that cons love about that. And, of course, the way he reversed it was borrowing huge amounts of money from you and me. I mean, this year we're going to spend $173 billion in taxes to pay interest on the money that Reagan borrowed and spent it. Of course, you know, much of it to his good buddies who put him into office with the Star Wars program and whatnot. But, you know, massively increased federal spending. And that injection into the economy, you know, boosted the economy. So there's that. I think a lot of conservatives also love him. He made Rehnquist head of the court. He appointed Scalia. I believe he appointed Sandra Day O'Connor. Who, you know, was a conservative hope, at least at the time. She seems to be a little more to the middle now, but Scalia was his big one. And he tried to appoint Bork, you know, as you'll recall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, O'Connor was the one that he ended up with instead. And perhaps most important, when you get right down to it, the core of the conservative agenda, the whole kernel that everything, you know, the middle of the onion, everything is, you know, layered around this, is cheap labor. Is the idea that workers should have no power in the marketplace, and that power should be held by an elite few You know, the corporate form is used now. Back 200 years ago is the aristocracy, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's just, they've just changed the mechanism, the legal mechanism. And the conservative agenda is really an agenda of plutocracy, of aristocracy, of feudalism. And Reagan, by busting up Patco and going after unions as aggressively as he did, and just being absolutely brazen about it, endeared himself to, you know, generations of conservatives, I think.
And, you know, the thing I worry about is this new naming craze. You know, he was still alive, and they were trying to, you know, put his image on the dime. And I think even with the dollar coin,
yeah.
you know, and I think that, you know, there's quite a bit of things in Washington that are named, the airport, the largest building besides the Pentagon, the Commerce Department is named after him. There's bridges, right. Monuments. They were saying there's more things in Washington named after Reagan than you know, any other president.
Yeah, in fact, it's ironic. The federal building that has the largest number of federal employees of any building is named after Ronald Reagan. It's quite remarkable. But I got a conservative alert in the email today. I didn't bother to read it, but it was, you know, on the conservativealerts.com website. You can get these alerts, you know, and what the cons are up to. And they are making a full court press. I mean, just going nuts, asking people to write letters to the editor and contact your representative, blah, 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 to put Reagan on the dime, to replace FDR with Reagan. And to take the toxic aspects of his worldview along with it. And he promoted the consent. You have to have the consent of Congress, the elected body, right? You know, the elected bodies, the House and Senate. But as the executive branch has grown in power, he began the real increase in the power of the executive branch. And then it kind of flattened out, it stabilized, and then Nixon cranked it up even more. And then it stabilized again under Carter somewhat, and then Reagan, cranked it up even more. Now George Bush, of course, is claiming that he can ignore the Geneva Convention and he can ignore the United States Constitution. Talk about, you know, grabbing power. So anyhow, and Bill Clinton added to it as well, and did it by what's called rulemaking. They do these administrative rules. And change things. And Clinton did an awful lot of these. In fact, in his first 100 days in office, one of the main things that Bush was doing was reversing rules that Clinton had passed, had made, that, you know, administrative procedures, administrative rules that protected the environment, that protected handicapped people, that gave workers more rights. I mean, you know, the progressive parts of Bill Clinton's administration and policies, and there were many progressive parts to it, you know, as well as conservative parts. And so here they're at it again now. The EEOC is proposing a rule change. Based on April 22nd, 2004, employers' wishes were granted. Employers, of course, being contributors to the Republican Party and this administration, were granted when the EEOC approved a final rule designed to overrule an appeals court decision and allow employers to reduce or even eliminate retiree health benefits. The AARP has questioned how EEOC can do what the Congress decided not to do and threaten to go to court if the regulation is not changed. Most experts believe the new regulation will withstand a court challenge. The new rule undermines the premise of equal cost or coverage that the ADEA generally requires. If you are concerned about this rule, by the way, this from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, contact your federal legislator. If you want to call your member of Congress, no matter where you live in the United States, you can call your congressman or senator. The number is area code 202-224-3121 and say you're concerned about this new EEOC rule that's going to wipe out medical benefits for retirees. Tom Hartman, 20 minutes after.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the Small Dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we
are. Vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There's a million sad stories on the side of the road. Strange how we all just got used to the blood. Millions of stories that'll never be told. Silent and frozen in the mud.
25 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here back with you. An unjustifiable law. Did you know, Florida is getting ready to purge their voter list again. I haven't seen any evidence that they have unpurged the last purge, you know, where 40, 50,000 mostly African Americans got bumped off the voting list in mostly Democratic areas just before the 2000 election. And for anybody who claims George Bush actually won the vote down there, of course, if they counted all the counties, he did not. But if they counted only those counties that Gore, stupidly, frankly, asked for a recount in, Bush apparently had 500 and some odd votes more. But if you counted all the counties, Gore beat Bush. But if you factor in the 50, somewhere between 50 and 90,000 people who were taken off the voting rolls inappropriately and illegally, Gore would have just kicked his butt. Just kicked his butt. Well, now they are fixing to purge the list again in Florida. They're going to pull another 47,000 names. So CNN goes down there and they say, well, that's cool. You want to do that. You know, you're a public institution, a public state, the state of Florida. You're supposed to be answerable to we, the people. We'd like to see the list. And the state of Florida says, no, you can't see the list. Why not, says CNN. Well, the state of Florida says, in 2001, right after that contested election, we passed a law. The Republican legislature, with Jeb Bush, passed a law saying that it's illegal to show anybody the list. Of course, they were trying to cover up the last list, but it's helping them with this one. So now we got CNN talking about, you know, maybe they're going to take him to court. We'll see. CNN says the law is unconstitutional, obviously. Dave in Humboldt County is on the line, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in, 26 minutes past the hour. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Tom. I had sent you an email last week to which you responded and told me one way I might yet be able to listen to your third hour, because it goes off the air up here, mm-hmm. the third hour, and it was a cable news network, and so I tried it, and happily it was working, but the same high-tech hacker goons that are looking forward to rigging our next election have been on my case for a long time. Went right in and took that away. Now I can no longer go into cable radio news. I cannot listen to you on Sirius. I cannot listen to you on TomHartman.com.
I'm sorry to hear that, Dave.
Well, you know, in a way, it's encouraging. It says that one person can maybe make a difference, and I do call in, and I do raise questions they don't like having raised.
Or at least one person can be persecuted. What's on your mind beyond that, or is that what you wanted to talk about?
Well, you know, I called in to talk to your producer and to let her know that was happening, so I didn't know that she was going to put me through to you right away. But I think what you're talking about is indeed a subject worthy of being discussed right now. I think the election will be rigged. The people that we have in office now do not have the kind of character that would be, what's the word, egodystonic, incompatible with their basic natures. It wouldn't be. That would be consistent with them to do it.
Sure. Are you seeing that same thing in California, by the way? Are you seeing this, you know, I mean, there's this talk about no voting machines in California, no siree, Bob. But, you know, is it cosmetic or, you know, what's
happening? No, I think it, in fact, most of the counties are going to honor that. A couple of them, I think San Bernardino County, which is a big one that would be strongly Democratic, their DA has filed an exception requesting that because of the amount of money they had invested in all these Debo voting machines that they don't want to have to redo it and don't think they could afford it. And so,
it's going to be interesting to see how it comes out. And so I think now that there's enough people sensitized, it's going to be interesting to see how people respond to it. Dave, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you there in Humboldt County. Glad you were able to get through. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This program, The Pill That Will Help You Escape the Matrix.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
People who work for the government of the city of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, have been banned from talking about city business with anyone outside the government. So says a declaration handed down by the acting city manager, who found himself embarrassed when the police department released information on planned staffing cuts to the media. Some city workers have protested what they call a gag order by taping their mouths at city meetings.
They are in violation of the law. And if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they will be terminated.
Ronald Reagan died over the weekend, leaving behind a legacy of huge budget deficits, increased military spending, and union busting. In 1981, his first year in office, the former president fired more than 11,000 striking air traffic controllers, destroying PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association. It's a move lauded by conservative Washington Post columnist George Will.
That really set the tone of the 80s for wealth creation, because, and it was good for labor. Because a nation that can fire workers will hire them.
But the National Air Traffic Controllers Association isn't so fond of Reagan's legacy. The union will gather in Washington, D.C. later this month to urge members of Congress to hire and train more air traffic controllers. The NATCA says it needs to avert a national shortage of air traffic controllers. The Federal Aviation Administration anticipates a shortfall nationwide of up to 50% in the next 10 years.
Discouraged workers are defined by the federal government as unemployed people who are no longer actively seeking work. And according to a new study of the state of young adults in America published by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, young people may make up the fastest growing population of discouraged workers. 3.8 million Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 were neither in school nor working in 2002, the latest year for which data is available for study. That's one out of every six 18 to 24-year-olds in the nation, and it represents an increase of nearly 20% in the number of disconnected young adults from 1999. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a team of psychiatrists and behavioral scientists at Emory University, we love money more when we work for it. The researchers performed MRI scans on the brains of two groups of volunteers. One group received money for doing nothing, while the other had to work for payment. They found the pleasure center of the brains of those who worked for their cash showed a higher level of stimulation when they got paid as compared to those who got money for nothing.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. You may remember back in 1998, 135 countries put their signature on a treaty which outlawed the use, well, I was going to say outlawed the use of torture. The use of torture had been outlawed going all the way back to the Geneva Conventions. But it created the world's first permanent global war crimes bill that could prosecute people. See, prior to that, they were ad hoc. In other words, the ad hoc, Latin for to this, I think it is. For example, after World War II, they wanted to prosecute the Nazi war criminals, and so we had to convene a special court. And, you know, get the permission of other countries and all this kind of stuff, get people involved. And it took, it was a big song and dance to make it happen. I mean, there was a broad consensus that these guys needed to be prosecuted. The same thing with prosecuting Milosevic. And I believe he may have actually been the first under this court, but I think he was prosecuted just before this. But in any case, in 1998, the world got together and said, you know, there are enough war crimes happening that we shouldn't have to go through this huge song and dance in order to create an international court that can prosecute them every time evidence of war crimes comes to light. Let's just have a permanent court. We'll base it in the Netherlands, in The Hague. And it will be extension is the wrong word. It will be associated or affiliated with the United Nations. But it will be its own independent entity as well. And 135 nations signed it. including the United States. Bill Clinton signed it. They're a big signing ceremony. That's why I say you might remember. Bill Clinton made a big deal out of this. Isn't this a wonderful thing? You know, now, you know, we can have a more peaceful world. Well, one of the first things that George Bush did when he became president was he unsigned it. Now, I still have not been able to find a lawyer who can explain to me how this works, but apparently it can be done. He deleted Clinton's signature from the treaty, thus withdrawing the United States from the treaty. And see, here's the tricky thing. If you're not a signatory to the treaty, then you're not agreeing, first of all, you're not agreeing to support the war crimes court. So you don't have to supply witnesses, and you don't, and there may be some finances involved and whatnot. But perhaps more important, you cannot be, I mean, you can be the subject of the court. In other words, the court can try and prosecute you, but they can't force extradition. They can't force you to produce people. And by and large, there are a lot of limitations on prosecution. In other words, it's very difficult for them to prosecute a country that's not a signatory to this treaty. And so the Bush administration rescinded the signature. Now, at the time, there was a pretty broad consensus among those of us who were watching the Bush administration and knew what was going on, that the reason why George Bush had taken Bill Clinton's signature off this international treaty that created the world's first permanent global war crimes tribunal was because of Henry Kissinger. The crimes of Henry Kissinger, the movie, which if you haven't seen it, I encourage you to rent it or buy it. It's, $15-$18, something like that. You can rent it, of course, at most movie stores. It's about an hour and a half, and it's a fascinating insight, not into just Henry Kissinger and the crimes that he committed. This man has probably more blood on his hands than any person alive right now. I wouldn't put him up there with Stalin or Hitler, but right alive right now, when you include his roles in Vietnam, his roles in South and Central America, his participation in shenanigans with and against the Soviet Union. I mean, just on and on it goes. I mean, it's just unbelievable, this movie, The Crimes of Henry Kissinger. And there was talk about prosecuting Henry Kissinger in the international court, the world's first permanent global war crimes tribunal. And so George Bush, being good buddies with Henry Kissinger, in fact, so close to him, I mean, you know, an old family friend, that when it came time to create the 9/11 Commission, over his objections, another great Bush flip-flop, he nominated Henry Kissinger as the first head of it. And, of course, everybody in the country went, wait a minute, this is the guy who tried to cover up Watergate. This is the guy who was working with Nixon on the... You're putting a cover-up man. This is a guy who is an international war criminal, and you're going to put him in charge of finding out what happened at 9/11? Come on. Give me a break. And Henry Kissinger, of course, withdrew his nomination. He said that he had business conflicts. business conflicts. I am in the business of war crimes. I cannot investigate another one. So anyhow, Bush pulled us out of this thing, out of this treaty. And now, and see, the danger to this, the danger to you and me about this, or to our nation, really the danger, the biggest danger is to our soldiers. And to any of those of us who travel overseas, or to our nation if Canada or Mexico were ever to successfully invade us. Pretty unlikely, but, you know, you never know. The danger is that we are defining, we have historically been the moral leader of the world. We have historically defined the moral rules by everything from the legally authorized murder of people, otherwise known as war, is conducted, to human rights, domestic human rights, how police treat suspected criminals, for example. We have been the beacon for the world of that, by and large, historically. I mean, going back to 1776. And certainly in the last 30 years or so, a lot of European nations, particularly the Scandinavian nations, have surpassed us in that, and many other things, quality of life, longevity, lifespan, health, infant mortality, blah, 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 blah. But nonetheless, we have been that beacon of liberty to the world, and being the moral standard bearer of the world, we have, in effect, been protecting ourselves. Because if we can get the world to go along with the idea that, hey, it's wrong to torture prisoners, for example, then when our guys get taken prisoner, they're less likely to be tortured. And if they are tortured, their torturers may face prosecution, and that might discourage them. But, of course, this didn't jibe with the Bush administration. In today's Wall Street Journal, an article by Jess Braven, headline, Pentagon Report Set Framework for Use of Torture. Bush administration lawyers contended last year that the president was not bound by laws prohibiting torture, and that government agents who might torture prisoners at his direction could not be prosecuted by the Justice Department. You get this now? It has to be authorized by the president. People are wondering, how far up is this Abu Ghraib thing going to go? What was it Ronald Reagan said? What was it Harry Truman said? The buck stops here. The advice, the Wall Street Journal writes, was part of a classified report on interrogation methods prepared for Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Now, why would Rumsfeld say, hey, is it legal for the president to authorize torture? I mean, why is Rumsfeld even sitting around thinking about it? We know, for example, that the use of torture is largely ineffective in getting information. When people are tortured, they will tell you anything you want to hear. And more often than not, it's not true. It's what they think you want to hear. I mean, we've seen this in criminal cases in the United States. Back in the old days when cops used to beat up people and force confessions with a rubber hose and whatnot. And we go back and we look at them, and, forced confessions are almost always wrong. We've seen it from that to the experience of actual, the United States conducting torture operations and other nations torturing our people in the early part of the 20th century, right up through Vietnam. We just know torture doesn't really work. I mean, there's setting aside the moral issue and setting aside the fact that once you start down that slippery slope, you are putting your own soldiers at risk. Setting aside those two rational arguments, it's also just a lousy way to extract information. It generally doesn't work. So why is Rumsfeld asking about it? Well, it turns out he wanted to use torture at Guantanamo Bay, specifically, according to today's Wall Street Journal. And the lawyers, this is a draft report, is over 100 pages long. The Wall Street Journal got a copy of it. They go through all the U.S. laws and international treaties forbidding torture and talk about how we can get around this and how we can get around that with this legal technicality or that legal technicality. And they finally conclude that the president, despite domestic and international laws constraining the use of torture, has the authority as commander-in-chief to approve almost any physical or psychological actions during interrogation, up to and including torture. Now, keep in mind the guy who went over and to run Abu Ghraib last fall, just before Lindy England and friends started, was the general who was running Guantanamo Bay, for whom this report was put together. And now on top of this, we have last Friday a report in Reuters by Robert Evans noting that the United Nations top human rights official said, this is on last Friday, that abuses by U.S. soldiers of Iraqi prisoners, High Commissioner for Human Rights, Bertrand Ramcharan, the British-trained lawyer from Guyana, longtime U.N. official, said, quote, willful killing, torture, or inhuman treatment of detainees is a grave breach of international law. Such acts might be designated as war crimes by a competent tribunal. End quote. The United States, and as I said, we refute. Now, what he was referring to, what the UN is now, and at the same time, it's the same, 3 days from the time that the Wall Street Journal, and by the way, this you can read it in the Wall Street Journal today, or it's on the top of commondreams.org. It's the headline at the very top of the page. Pentagon report set framework for use of torture. Senior officials at Guantanamo requested a rethinking of the whole approach to defending our country when you have an enemy that does not follow the rules, the officials said. So that's what the British said about us. An unconventional warfare. They don't follow the rules. Well, then let's torture them. Let's arrest their wives. Let's arrest their children. We have done that in Iraq, you know. We have arrested the wives and children and put them into Abu Ghraib prison of Iraqi officials who were not talking the way we wanted them to talk. Anyhow, this 45-page report gave numerous examples. One, for example, a guy named Saddam Aboud al-Rawi, 29, just brought, caught up in a sweep. 90% of the people in Abu Ghraib were just swept up. He was one of them. He was subjected to 18 days of torture in the U.S.-run prison, which included pulling his teeth out, kicking him, beating him, threatening him with rape, and warning him that if he told the visiting representatives of the United Nations about it, he would be killed. And pointing to the 30-some-odd people who had been killed in that prison as proof that, based on this and other reports, the UN says the United States may be guilty of war crimes. We got to do something about this, folks. We got to change this, and quick. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Creatures in the deep ocean adapt to life in a dark and dangerous world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The middle zone of the deep ocean is a very dark place. Little sunlight penetrates to depths of 600 feet or more, and we would find it impossible to see anything down there. On the other hand, deep sea creatures are well suited for survival in this cold, dark world. Tracy Sutton is a marine scientist at the Harbor Branch Oceanographic Institution. He studies animals that live between 600 and 1,000 feet deep, and he says a lot of them can see in the dark.
The eyes of the animals down there, they're modified so that they can see any little available light. So they don't form a real good image, but their eyes are super, super sensitive. Their eyes are more sensitive than any instruments we have to measure light.
Sutton says good eyesight helps predators find their prey. Those other creatures have to take care not to be seen. Sutton says that's not easy because there's nothing to hide behind.
Most of these animals spend their entire lives without seeing a solid object. They don't see the bottom. They don't see the surface. They just float in this midwater zone where there's just nowhere to hide at all.
Since there's nowhere to hide, the creatures of the deep have tried to make themselves harder to see.
The fishes are jet black. Other things are completely transparent. And often when you catch them and you look in a trawl bucket, you can't tell that it's there until you pour it out and then you see, oh, there's lots of stuff in there. It was just transparent.
Sutton says most deep sea animals are less than a foot long, but they have surprisingly big heads, teeth, and fangs. Food is scarce in the open water, and they need to be able to eat almost anything they can find. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
If there's one rule to this game, everybody's gonna name it.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour. George Bush's tortured logic.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that the right wing, particularly the so-called moral right, the Christian right, by and large, like to blame liberals for is something they call moral relativism. Moral relativism means it's not that, the opposite of moral relativism is there is good and there is bad, and nothing ever justifies. No amount of good justifies bad. No amount of bad justifies good. There's simply good and bad. And moral relativism is where you say, well, you know, sometimes this is justified under those circumstances. So here you've got and this is the big complaint of conservatives is that liberals are moral relativists, which, by the way, I would say, by and large, is not true. But nonetheless, here the report, again, from the Wall Street Journal, this report about torture, telling the president that torture is okay, advised that government officials could argue that, quote, necessity, end quote, justified the use of torture. Quote, sometimes the greater good for society will be accomplished by violating the literal language of the criminal law, end quote. Don't you get it? That's like, you know, okay, let's apply that right across the board. Let's just start, you know, beating up prisoners again. Let's start kicking in doors. Let's haul away people we don't like. The lawyers concluded that the torture statute applied to Afghanistan, but not Guantanamo. Now, here's another bizarre bit of logic in a nation of laws. Because Guantanamo lies, quote, within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States and accordingly is within the United States. The Bush administration has argued before the Supreme Court that foreigners held at Guantanamo have no constitutional rights and can't challenge their detention in court. See, they're trying to have it both ways. The Supreme Court would let us know by the end of this month, in all probability, what they think about this. Another scary thought. So, anyhow, the president, Pat Leahy, had asked, you know, is torture okay? He was told, we do not permit, tolerate, or condone it. At the same time, this report was... Thanks to Louise for producing our program, particularly Small Dog Electronics for sponsoring the program. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up, and to Jay for writing and performing our theme music. This is Tom Harbin. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America.